How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our true crime podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Jen.
Hey, Cam, how are you?
I am pretty darn good. How are you?
Good. I'm doing fairly well.
I hear you got a little case for us.
I do. Should we start it?
Yeah. Yes,
all right.
Please.
You know how I love to go to thrift stores and I love auctions and estate sales, tax
sales.
Yes, I do. You know, all that kind of stuff. I hate having a house that looks like everybody else's house. I like it. So if you come into my house, you will not see something that you can find in a store. Nobody else will have anything, or very few people will have what I have in my house, right?
Correct. It's very eclectic.
Well, another thing that I like to do that I really don't talk about because a lot of people look down on it is dumpster diving.
Oh, sorry.
Close. Dumpster diving is what you call you doing masturbation. Sorry. I had to do that.
I hate you.
Dumpster diving or skip diving. I never really go into the actual dumpsters to do it, but I love like on big item trash days to like go around because people throw out furniture.
Ew,
that's actually how I got my end tables.
No.
My coffee tables in the living room.
I mean, I know, but no, I don't. I don't like that. I don't.
Mm-mm. Oh, no. These are old record cabinets, probably from the 30s or 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And they still have the hardware on them. They're a little banged up, but they're solid wood. And they were in great condition. Just people don't need record tables anymore, right? Mm-hmm.
I like
cabinets.
That idea. I just, you know,
well, I wouldn't
phobic.
Get a couch. I wouldn't get a fabric couch or fabric chairs or a mattress. There's no way in hell I'd get a mattress off the side of there.
I'm also scared that it's going to have a ghost attached to it or a demon spirit, and then I'm going to bring it home.
No,
I'm not kidding. That's what goes through my head.
No.
Okay. Go ahead. I can't wait. This is going to be good.
But my record cabinets that I use, I actually found one on Craigslist, and I'm like, gosh, I need to get another one. And about 2 weeks later, just like magic, there appeared one that looked almost exactly like the one I had. So for $5, I got 2 coffee tables, which is
nice. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That's very
nice. I love them. And
with
like
no
said,
ghost.
Nobody else has them. And that's where I store all my old magazines. All, you know, it's great. Mm-hmm. Well, the reason why I brought this up is because somebody that was in the back alleyway collecting treasures for themselves actually helped solve the disappearance of a missing millionaire.
Get out.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Okay, good. Oh, you got me. I'm into that. Okay.
All right. William Billy McGrath was a 50-year-old interior designer living in Phoenix, Arizona. And not only could Billy decorate a room and rearrange furniture, which he did extremely well, Billy also had a knack for buying and flipping houses. In fact, I think that's how he made a lot of his money. And although Billy was a millionaire, you wouldn't know it. He was very unassuming. He dressed very laid back, like in long shorts and flip-flops were basically his daily uniform. And if you look back at pictures, he wore a lot of like tropical floral Magnum PI type shirts, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Kind of very Jimmy Buffett feeling, kind of laid back.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and he even drove a pickup truck. Nothing loud. He wasn't loud. He wasn't obnoxious. He was just a very quiet man living in a house on a hill that overlooked the city of Phoenix. Billy had many close friends, and he loved to always be around them. He would hold parties. He would go out to dinner. But Billy rarely dated, and it could have been because his last relationship scared him away from the dating scene.
Ooh.
In 2005, Billy went to Pittsburgh on a business trip. Now, Billy's from the Pittsburgh area. There, Billy met 29-year-old Mark Fleckenstein. They seemed to get along really well, and Billy invited Mark back to Phoenix to come out for a weekend. Well, Mark never really went back to Pittsburgh. The two moved in together and got a dog named Roy. And everything seemed fine and dandy until Billy discovered that Mark had quite the violent side. He was verbally abusive and physically abusive, too. Soon, they broke up. But, as a lot of these relationships do, Mark came back onto the scene. About a year after their initial meeting, while Billy was sleeping, Mark attacked him.
Oh.
He sprayed Billy with mace and zip-tied his hands and feet together. Mark then proceeded to attack Billy with a tire iron. It was bad.
That's terrible.
He got the shit beat out of him. Beat up Billy really badly, and what he wanted was money. And he kept beating Billy until Billy wrote Mark a check for a huge sum of money. Which, once he got the check, Mark left to go cash it. And Billy soon escaped to his neighbors, where they called 911. Mark was arrested on aggravated assault charges and then sentenced to over 4 years in prison. That would keep you away from relationships a little bit.
I would say so. And I'm thinking, Mark, like, did he have that planned out from the get-go, I guess?
I don't know. I don't...
Or if he just snapped.
He was abusive all along, and he maybe needed money, and Billy wouldn't give him money, so maybe he snapped, and this is the only way I can get it is to beat the living hell out of him.
Yeah, but he's going to get caught. I mean...
You'd think.
Ugh. Okay.
So let's flash forward to 2009. Somewhere in the middle of August, Billy's friends and family grew concerned when Billy failed to return phone calls. Now, this wasn't like Billy at all. He was a talker. He would talk for hours on the phone. When Billy's cousin left a message on Billy's home phone threatening to send someone if Billy didn't return his calls, the cousin received a very odd email response from Billy, or at least it came from Billy's email address. The email simply said that Billy had suddenly decided to leave Phoenix and would get in touch once settled.
Nope.
So the cousin was kind of concerned and called Billy's brother, Brian. He tried to call Billy, also was unable to reach Billy. And within a few days, Brian received a message from Billy, or from Billy's email address, explaining that he had decided to get the hell out of Phoenix and to close the house up, and he had arranged to have some work done while he was gone. The email stated that Billy might go back to Pittsburgh, spelled P-I-T-T-S-B-U-R-G, no H. Now, Billy's from Pittsburgh. And it also stated that Billy had a dentist appointment on Wednesday, W-E-N. Now, Billy's brother said, well, this is kind of odd because Pittsburgh is spelled, you know, with an H. And Billy, of course, would know that. And also, Wednesday, the abbreviation would not be W-E-N. It would be W-E-D. Billy would know these things. Billy was a smart man. Billy's friends and family knew that Billy had been thinking about going away for a bit. It was getting close that Mark was being scheduled for parole, and Billy was really nervous. He had talked for months about getting away, doing something, you know, getting out of town for a while, because when Mark would be paroled, he would be paroled back in Phoenix, and Mark just didn't feel comfortable being there. But the more he got to talking, the more he realized that he was not going to leave. He was just going to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
But Billy was really nervous, they thought, so maybe he did change his mind. But it was odd because Billy would have told someone that he was leaving. He would never just do something that huge without speaking to anybody or telling anybody where he was going. So on the morning of August 26, Billy's financial advisor, David Barnett, starts listening to his voice messages at work. There was a message from Billy McGrath, or at least it's someone stating that they were Billy McGrath.
Oh.
Billy had an appointment with David later that afternoon, and the Billy that was on the message said that he was just not feeling well, and he wanted to talk on the phone or maybe reschedule the appointment. So Billy gave out a new cell phone number for David to return the phone call. David Barnett and Billy had grown fairly close over their 2 years of working together, and he knew what Billy's voice sounded like, and he said there's no way that's Billy's voice. Even if Billy was sick, that's not Billy's voice.
Mm-hmm.
Billy spoke very slowly and very lowly. And this voice was very quick, talked very quickly, and even though the voice was raspy, he knew. So David called the number given and talked with the person that identified himself as Billy. David told the man that he left a message and said that he would call back later in the day, but he hoped that Billy could attend their 1 p.m. meeting. After hanging up, David recalled that Billy had been nervous about his accounts being hacked. He was always so nervous that somebody was going to go in and embezzle some of his money. And he was so worried about the bank fraud, it was a huge concern. Mm-hmm. And Billy, for the past 6 months or so, had even gone as far as putting extra steps of security on his accounts, like adding voice passwords or, you know, extra passwords and things.
Now, here's my question. Is this because Mark is about to get out, or has he been, like, was somebody giving him the idea that they might try to steal from him?
I'm really unsure. I know Mark getting out was played huge on his mind. And I'm sure the fact that Mark wanted money so badly, that was the whole reason of the huge, of him getting beaten up, that I'm sure that just solidified things in his brain that people are up to get your money and maybe you're not safe. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, totally.
And maybe he went into just a kind of a paranoia type thing. Because if somebody beat the shit out of me for money, I would be very paranoid about people want my money, you know?
Mm-hmm. Totally.
So when 1:30 came and went and Billy failed to appear at David's office, David called the police and asked them to go check on Billy. Go do a welfare check, right?
Mm-hmm.
Officers went to Billy's residence and they did a property check, found the house was locked, looked inside the windows, couldn't see anything on the inside, but one officer was able to squeeze through the doggy door just to go inside to see if maybe Billy was injured. But once inside, they looked around and they thought everything was fine. No sign of Billy anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
The officers came back and reported that everything seemed to be in its place. Even though Billy wasn't home, I mean, Billy's Tacoma truck wasn't at the house, so maybe Billy was just out for the day. Maybe he'd gone grocery shopping or to the doctor if he really was sick. Even if to the doctor if he was sick. So even though the police weren't concerned, David was. The financial advisor started to play detectives and went over David's account. David noticed that there was a recent pattern, larger than normal withdrawals, and they were more frequent. And that was very unlike Billy. Billy was very frugal. Of course, if you want to be the millionaire, I think you kind of have to be a little bit. That's why I'll never be rich.
That's why I'll never be rich either. I spend everything like it's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. And there were some large checks that had been cashed recently, and David felt that the signatures didn't quite match up. So David called Billy's bank and put a freeze on the account.
Good.
On August 28th, David gets another message from this Billy, and David called him back. Billy answered the phone with a scratchy-sounding voice. And
still sick, I'm sure.
And he said he was really concerned that he was locked out of all of his accounts. David went on to explain that there was a bunch of suspicious account activity. And the man said, oh, yeah, that's just somebody else is writing and signing checks. And I had given my PIN number to a close friend, so he's able to use the ATM. Then David explained that if Billy really needs this money and to get his accounts unfrozen, he needs to report to the branch itself to get them released. And then Billy, or whoever, said that he was driving from San Diego and he was going to Mexico, and he didn't know if he had time to stop at the bank.
Wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, the bank security also called Billy's cell phone, and this Billy complained to the bank security that, you know what, you're just spending way too much time working on this investigation. And I just don't have time to stop at the bank to unfreeze these accounts, so you're going to have to do something about it now. Not cool.
Nope.
So at this time, David Barnett feels that he really needs to get the police more involved. There's something more going on. Nobody's been able to talk to Billy, the real Billy. Maybe somebody's holding Billy hostage and trying to get his money. Because, you know, that bank fraud just keeps going through David's mind that maybe he wasn't just paranoid. Maybe somebody really was trying to get his money. So the police do open an investigation, and it's led by Detective Melissa Pulver. Now, I just want to say, two different documents. One, she is Detective Melissa Pulver. One is Detective Melissa Lutch, I believe. Now, the Lutch, I believe, might be her maiden name, and the Pulver may be her married name. I'm not for sure. It is the exact same person. When I do Google check both names, the same person comes up. So I'm assuming she's married. So I'm going to go with Pulver. You can't talk me out of it. That's what I'm doing.
Pulverize.
Pulver.
That's good.
She's good, Cop too, man. She's good. So while Detective Pulver is looking at some of Billy's financials, she noticed that one of the checks has been made out to a locksmith. She reaches out to the locksmith, like any good detective would do, and she speaks with him. And he said that Billy had all 18 locks around his house changed. Billy had told him the reason why he was doing that is because he thought someone was going to break into his house and hurt him. Billy also had a whole bunch of security, other security measures put around his house too, like videos and stuff and like that.
At this time, was this the real Billy?
Like, this was did the they real Billy. This was okay. Right before this new Billy with the weird voice started to happen.
Okay.
And this is the only signature on the check that David Barnett identified as Billy. The other two didn't look right to him. So with this information, Detective Pulver goes and speaks with Billy's friends and family and said, you know, hey, when's the last time you've seen or spoke with Billy? And a lot of them's like, you know what? I think it's been about 2 weeks. I haven't seen him in 2 weeks. And then when she asked him why they thought Billy was scared someone would break in and hurt him, they explained about the ex-boyfriend Mark and how he would soon be paroled. And they explained how terrified Billy was that Mark would come back and cause him harm. Mm-hmm. So, and then when they asked, you know, do you think, would Billy just leave? And all of his friends like, there's no way. Billy was too much of a planner. He loved to organize and he was a researcher and he wasn't even spontaneous. Like, he could not just pack a few things and go. He couldn't pack up his dog. He couldn't pack up the house, nothing. One of Billy's friends that was also the contractor of all the projects Billy would do, like the house flipping, his name was Bradley Tucker. He told police that Billy said to him that he was going to head to maybe Palm Springs or maybe Mexico because, you know, of this Mark Fleckenstein. He was scared to death. This gave Detective Pulver a lead. Maybe it was this Mark Fleckenstein. Maybe he is out on parole. She decided to check on Mark's whereabouts, you know, and sure enough, he was still in his teeny tiny cell in prison.
Oh, good.
She even had somebody go check to make sure it was him inside the prison. And they did a background check on him. Was he involved in any gangs? And which made me laugh, because if you see a picture of this guy, you're like, he's not in any gang at all.
Well, maybe you never
crocheting,
know.
Maybe the crocheting gang. Which I'm not saying anything bad about crocheters.
He's not the gang. Gang
he doesn't
type.
Seem like the gang. Yeah, there was nobody he was associated with that would he could have talked into hurting Mark Billy. So police, along with Detective Pulver, go start looking closer at Billy McGrath's house. They go inside. So on September 4th, Billy's contractor gave police the keys to get into Billy's house. They combed through the house and looking at things, there's a lot of things that just seemed odd that a person that was planning to leave would leave, right? Uh-huh. There's fresh fruit in the refrigerator. If you're going on a trip, you're not going to leave fresh fruit. I mean, when we go on vacation, we try to eat up everything or at least freeze it if we can, right?
Right.
In the bathroom, Billy left his contacts and glasses. I can't see without my glasses or contacts. There's no way I'd leave them. Mm-mm. The luggage Billy used to travel, still there. Billy's desk, there was a calendar. And remember, his friend said that he was a planner. He organized everything. He had doctor's appointments scheduled. He had parties scheduled. He even had his appointment with David written down. He wasn't planning to leave. They really didn't think there's no way. Well, kitchen sink, there was a knife with peanut butter on it. You're not going to leave that if you go away, especially if you're planning to go away for a while. You'll have rats. Nobody wants rats. They did find a pillow that had a blood stain on it.
Oh, great.
And they took that along with a razor and a toothbrush for maybe DNA analysis later. When photos were taken from the house, were shown to Billy's friends and family, they're like, yeah, see that dog blanket right there? That was Roy. That was Billy's dog's name. That was Roy's favorite blanket. If they would have left, he would have taken that blanket, or Billy would have made his bed.
Now
Billy would have done
this the dog.
With Billy.
Uh-uh.
Thinking that maybe Billy was so frightened that just by Maybe he did leave. Maybe he panicked. Maybe he had a panic attack and he just left. You know, it could happen. I mean, it was doubtful, but it could happen, right? Billy's wallet wasn't there. He could have panicked. He could have grabbed his wallet, grabbed the dog, got in his truck, and left. It's possible. Not very possible, but it is possible. So Detective Pulver ran another check on all of his accounts, and he hadn't purchased gas in weeks. There wasn't like any hotel charges. There were no food or drink charges, nothing. I mean, he had been gone for 2 weeks, they think, and nothing. Mm-hmm. So they're pretty sure Billy did not leave town. So there was a quick bolo or a be on the lookout placed immediately on Billy's gold Tacoma truck. Police then start to canvass Billy's neighborhood and asking neighbors if they had seen Billy recently or if they've heard anything unusual within the past couple weeks that they might need to be aware of. And one neighbor said that on the night of August 18th or 19th, they woke up to the sound of two gunshots, and they were loud and they echoed everywhere in the canyon. And that was also the last night they could remember Billy's dog barking. And they found it really strange because the dog barked all the time. We have one of those in our neighborhood, too. But after that night, never heard a sound from the dog again. So looking back at Billy's financials, Detective Pulver notices that the last checks to clear in Billy's account were written on August 19th and 20th, right about the time after the neighbors heard the gunshot. And both of those checks were made out to Billy's contractor, Brad Tocker. And they totaled $15,500.
Oh, no.
Now, Brad Tocker had spoken with Detective Pulver before. He was the one that gave him the key to Billy's house. And he made it quite clear that he would do anything to help Billy. Billy and Brad had met 18 months prior on a dating site.
Oh.
And even though they didn't quite have the love connection that they had hoped, they did become really close friends because, you know, Billy flipped houses. And Brad basically was a remodeler, so they kind of formed a nice friendship business relationship together. They were really close.
Mm-hmm.
And Billy even let Brad use his ATM card to get materials for the remodeling of the houses that he worked on. And as for the checks, Billy had left those for Brad because he was working on a recent purchase, the Solano house, which is the house, the street that, you know, Solano is the street, the house is on the street, so they called it the Solano house. And that those checks were for, you know, the labor Brad was doing on the house and for any supplies that Brad would need.
Mm-hmm.
And so they asked him again, you know, Brad, do you know where Billy was going? And Brad again said, you know, Billy was really afraid that Mark was going to come back to get him. But, you know, Brad said, Billy collected antiques and he had mentioned something about finding a certain antique that he wanted or a collection of antiques that he wanted. This collection was in Mexico, and he maybe went down to Mexico to buy those antiques.
Mm-mm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
buy it.
Thinking, okay, this isn't the first time we've heard Mexico, Detective Pulver checked to see if Billy was seen at the border, and nope, nothing. There was no record of Billy ever crossing the border.
Plus, wouldn't he need to get gas? Like, how did
he get
down there?
He would need gas. He would need his passport, which, I mean, yeah, unless they had maybe, who knows, maybe there was another, they thought he had another account in his name. I don't know how that works. I'm not a police officer.
You just play one on the internet.
I don't even play one well.
I know.
I'm just kind of here. I just read things and report what I read. That's what I do. I'm a simple girl.
You look pretty, though.
I'm just a white woman with nothing better to do with my time than a podcast, Camille.
That's right. That's right.
Anyway, police realized that Brad was the last person to see Billy before he disappeared. So their suspicions started to grow.
Me too.
So they're saying, you know what? We're going to investigate Brad a little closer. And they discovered that Brad, once upon a time, had a business. And that business, it didn't do very well. And Brad got caught trying to burn it down for the insurance money.
Color me shocked.
I know. Brett also had a bit of a gambling problem.
And oh.
He was in tens of thousands of dollars in debt.
Keeps getting better, Brad.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, his house was about to be foreclosed upon.
Brad.
So the police are like, huh. Hey, Brad, you said you would do anything to find Billy. You want to take a polygraph test? And he does. He took the polygraph test. Brad took the test.
And?
He fails miserably. But police are like, you know what? We've got him on the line. We are not going to tell him because he's giving us info. We're just going to see where we go with this.
Yeah, let him hang himself.
So once again, they go back to Billy's financial statements and credit card statements, and they find that somebody had charged over $900 to an online shoe company. Now, these high-end shoes in size 9.5 were ranged from very expensive leather loafers to like running shoes to tennis shoes. And they were sent to the Solano house address.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, police knew from Billy's friends that he only wore flip-flops and he wasn't one to spend money that excessively on especially clothes.
On shoes. Yeah.
Or shoes or clothes, you know. There were some other charges for clothes, too. And plus, you know what? Billy wore a size 8 shoe.
Oh, Brad.
Mm. They also found unusual withdrawals and transfers beginning on August 18th, including a $9,000 transfer to a Chase bank account belonging to Brad's mother.
Oh.
And a $7,000 transfer to HSBC Mortgage.
Oh.
Hmm. So police subpoena the bank to get surveillance videos, and it comes back with Brad using Billy's ATM card machines. And it also shows him depositing Billy's checks into his own account.
Wow.
They know Brad has done something with Billy. They can't find Billy. He's not really talking. Brad's not saying anything. They don't know what to do. They can't really... They don't want Brad to run either, right?
Mm-mm.
I mean, they don't know what to do. So on October 15th, police arrest Brad Tocker. And they arrest him for fraudulent schemes.
Brad Tocker's a little focker, if you ask me.
A big old bleeding focker. So they took his cell phone and his size 9.5 shoes. Three officers conducted a warranted search of Tocker's residence and handed out missing persons flyers throughout the neighborhood. And from Brad's house, the officers took, ready, 3 computers, a gambling card, and slips. They took $2,901 in cash. They took his driver's license. They took Western Union receipts showing that Brad wire transferred money to the Chase Home Finance. More 9.5 size shoes and clothing that matched the order to Billy's credit card that was mailed to the Solano residence. They also impounded and searched Brad's vehicle. And inside they found a .45 caliber bullet, which the brand is ELD. A September 18th bank receipt showing $8,200 deposit into Brad's account, and a September 23rd receipt documenting a trash deposit at a Phoenix solid waste disposal site.
Ugh. You know, and he thought that was his friend. That's terrible.
Mm-hmm. So they finally had their man in custody, but they needed to find Billy. So when Brad was questioned by the police, he still claimed he knew nothing about what happened to Billy.
Mm-hmm.
So what'd they do? They gave him a piece of paper and asked him to write down the word Pittsburgh.
Oh.
Guess what? No H. Wrote it without the H. They also got, when every time that Billy or Brad called the bank, it's all, we're going to record the call. You know, you get the, this is a recorded call. They subpoenaed the bank for those phone records, recordings, right? And they were able to match Brad's voice to the Billy that called the bank.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that the police knew that Billy had most likely been killed, right? That Brad probably had killed Billy.
Oh, totally.
But when they checked Brad's web browser history, they pretty much knew for sure. The police were shocked. Said it was the most blatant history he'd ever seen. The searches included, like, if you killed somebody, how would you dispose of the body without getting caught?
Oh, mm-hmm.
or kill without being caught, or how to murder someone and get away with it. I mean, isn't that a book? Or quick murder. And the other one that killed me was getting rid of dead animal smell.
Oh, yeah. Not suspicious at all, buddy.
No. Mm-mm. If you're going to do it, wipe your memory from your computer.
Well, and not to mention, he's stealing the money. It's going to go back to him. That's just the dumbest thing ever.
The whole thing. But no matter how long and how hard they interrogated Brad Tucker, no matter how much evidence they told Brad they had, he wouldn't say a thing. He just kept repeating, I have no idea what happened. I have no idea. I don't know. Maybe he's in Mexico. I don't know.
He wishes he was in Mexico because then he wouldn't be in trouble.
With Brad still being in jail, no body, no evidence that Billy's even dead, they go back to Billy's house and they start to process it as a crime scene because they know he's dead. They know he is.
Right.
Right? So they go back and they collected anything that could be potential evidence, and they used our buddy Luminol to search for any sign of blood or any blood that's been cleaned up. Now, as I've stated before, Luminol does glow when there's any kind of organic copper type thing, especially with blood, but it also does horseradish, cleaning solvents, you know, other different things.
Cat urine,
sure. But when they put Luminol in this house, it was huge. There was indicators of a heavy concentration of blood in Billy's office and other areas in the home. There was no doubt. I mean, nobody spilled that amount of horseradish all over Billy's office.
I would think not.
No way. They knew. And they also knew with that amount of blood, he was gone. And it was a horrible attack.
God, from your friend. I just can't.
So the next thing they did was send out cadaver dogs. And nothing. Not one hit anywhere. They were even in a house and were putting holes in the ground for fear that, you know, or not fear, but for the smell to come up that the dogs could. No, nothing. Dogs, not one hit. Now they knew Billy was for sure dead, but they didn't have a body. And it's really hard to convict someone for murder without a body, but it's doable. You can do
it. Yes.
So about this time, the media starts to pick up on the story. It's everywhere. They're looking for Billy. They know he's dead. You know, Brad's neighbors start to come forward. One had actually seen the missing persons flyer and remembered seeing Brad and Billy with Billy's gold Tacoma truck in Brad's driveway around August 17th or 18th. And yet another person gave officers a trash bag of car parts that he found in the alley behind the dumpster. He was dumpster diving. And he found bags of car parts from a gold Toyota Tacoma pickup
truck. Brad tore up that truck? Wow.
And another neighbor heard loud clanging and banging for about 3 days after he saw Billy's truck in the in the driveway of Brad's house. But what's interesting from the dumpster diver, remember that he found all those Toyota pickup truck parts? He handed them over to the police. And inside that bag was a cigarette butt. The cigarette butt was from the type of cigarette that Billy smoked. They sent it off for DNA. Bam, came back, matched the DNA that was taken from Billy's razor. So now
they know.
They know that those are the parts from Billy's Tacoma truck. Also, a scrap metal collector calls the police. And he's like, you know what? I think I have what's left of Billy's truck. So they go out to the scrapyard. And when I say that thing was scrapped for parts, it was scrapped. They actually called it a rolling chassis. The windows were removed. The seats were removed. Any parts, bolts, everything. The only thing that was still there were like the tires and like the main body.
The frame. Wow.
Everything was taken apart. Completely taken apart. No motor, nothing. It was bare, bare minimum.
Kind of like a lot of the cars we see around these parts.
Worse.
The hood
of the truck was gone. Any conceivable part that was inside was gone. No motor, no hoses, no nothing.
I got you. You haven't been to my house lately.
No windshield wipers.
The crack house. It has cars in the front yard, just like that. I mean,
No, this was bad. I mean, it was bad. Police also, they know. They just need more evidence. I mean, they've got, just need a little bit more, right?
That's when they get it's looking pretty bad for Brad, if you ask me.
That's when they get a phone call from some construction workers that had been working at the Solano house that Billy owned. They had come across two plastic bags that were in the attic, and they handed them over to the police.
That better inside not be Billy.
Inside those bags, nope. Inside those bags was a shipping box that was addressed to Brad's mother, who was in a nursing home, by the way. And it had contained a Glock 45 handgun that had some blood on the barrel, several magazine clips, 45 caliber ELD brand bullets, an AT&T cell boost mobile phone, and Billy's cell phone. It had Billy's financial records, including purchases and investments that went so far back as to 1995. It had his checkbook. It had accounts that were opened in Billy's name after August 19th, 2009. It had a handwritten list of Billy's accounts with the usernames and passwords. It had Billy's wallet, credit card, the one that was used to make all those shoe purchases. It had his driver's license. It had his vehicle insurance card. Bam, they had it. Now all they needed to do is they sent that Glock in for get testing on that blood and just to get it tested and analyzed in general. The blood matched Billy's DNA and Brad's fingerprints were all over that sucker.
Now, why would Brad keep all that? You know, I mean, what? Why would he do that?
I know. Even when they sat Brad down and said, look at this, mofo. Look what we have.
I don't know. Maybe he's in Mexico. I don't know. I don't
exactly.
know
Exactly. He didn't say anything. He said, I have no idea. I have nothing to do with his death. So in March 2011, 2 years after Billy McGrath disappeared, Brad Tucker stood in court on trial for Billy's murder.
Good.
After 12 days of testimony and only 2 hours of jury deliberation, Brad was found guilty of
Good.
Murder.
Obviously.
Now, Billy's friends and family were thrilled with the verdict. I mean, they were so happy that it was, I mean, they were sad, of course, that Billy had been killed, but they were happy that things...
They got some justice.
They did get justice, but they needed Billy's body. They needed to bring him home. There's no closure if they don't have his body. I mean, right. And they're in Phoenix, and they're worried. Is he out in the middle of this desert somewhere? Where is he? A few months before Brad is set to go to court once again to be sentenced, which he stands to do a life sentence, he calls his lawyer, and he's like, hey, I have a chance to spend life behind bars, right? I want to know if I tell where Billy's body is, can I get a plea deal? Always chicken shits. I'm telling you, you can kill somebody, but you never want to go through with the punishment. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the lawyer arranges a meeting and Detective Pulver sees Brad and he's just like, what do you have to say? And he said, well, I buried him, but he never admitted to killing Billy. He just admitted to getting rid of the body.
So somebody else did it, I guess, and he just...
Happened to clean it up. Yeah. So Brad takes the pen from Detective Pulver and draws her a map to where Billy's body is. Billy McGrath is buried under the kitchen floor of Brad Tucker's mother's house. Now, this house had been foreclosed upon, so there's a new owner and there are new tenants, and they knew nothing about it, and they had to be relocated. Could you imagine the police knocking on your door? Saying, yeah, we've got to go dig up your kitchen because we have a dead body.
I think that'd be a breach in the house contract somewhere.
So the police had to dig through a slab of concrete.
Wow.
And they started digging through under the concrete and they recovered Billy's body. And once they brought him up, they found that he had electrical tape all over his head and face, which we know what that means, right? You cover somebody's face after you're dead, that's guilt. Brad's body was brought to autopsy, and it was revealed that even though they did hear the gunshots, they never found any ballistic evidence. So my guess is it probably killed the dog. Brad probably shot the dog.
That's what I was thinking.
They never did find a dog. It was found that Billy actually was probably hit over the head many times, maybe pistol whipped. But he had bruising on the inside of his skull. So he was probably attacked very violently, and with the amount of blood, it had to have been.
So that you're right then, the dog was shot.
It had to have been. I mean, that's my guess. The dog was never mentioned in like the court documents or anything. The dog was never mentioned again. I'm assuming that the shots, and since the police didn't get any bullets from the crime scene, I'm assuming it was in the dog.
Well, and stupid Brad probably thought, ooh, gunshots are going to be so loud, that'll call attention. So he killed Billy by, you know, bashing
his head. Or he shot the dog.
And then shot the dog. Yeah, that's what I mean. But it was like not realizing that,
Yeah. But we'll never know because Brad still hasn't said anything, although he did receive a life sentence. He will spend his natural life behind bars. Good. And unfortunately, until Brad gets his shit together and gets a conscience, we will never really know what happened that night.
Those leather loafers aren't doing you much good with your paper slippers in prison, are they, Brad?
Thank you. Hmm. When, you know, I saw pictures of everything that he bought. He wasn't even wearing them. Like, he just bought them. And
did he give them as gifts?
They were hidden in his house. They had the tags
probably
still on
because
them.
That ding dong thought, if I wear these, people are going to question where I got the money to buy them, not realizing that the money trail was earlier, like before you even, you know, once you purchase the shoes, it's there.
Right.
It's not like he should have at least worn them.
And you know what? It's all for money. And really, come on. I mean, I know it's the root of all evil. And yeah, another life was taken over something so
stupid.
Silly. And you know
what? You know what? They were friends. Billy probably would have given Brad the money if he would have said,
or loaned him.
That's what I mean. Like, I'm desperate right now. I have a gambling problem. I need help.
Right. You know, I'm trying. I've got, my house is getting foreclosed upon. And you know what? I've been in really bad financial situations before. It's not worth killing anybody over. People are willing to help you if you just call. And I mean, there does come a time where they can't help you any longer, but get your shit together. Don't gamble. Go to Gamblers Anonymous. I know it's an addiction, but just get your shit together.
I know.
Does that sound cold? I don't mean it to sound
cold. It does
sound
a little chilly, but I do understand what you're saying. Like,
don't kill your friends because you need some cash. Rob a bank. If he would have robbed a bank, he only would have gotten 10 years. Right?
Oh, really?
Probably.
Armed robbery? I don't know.
He wouldn't get life. Now he's in life in prison.
That's where he needs to be, too.
Forever, thank God. Yeah, so anyway, poor Billy.
That was interesting, and I just don't talk about senseless murder. No kidding. Hey, Jen, guess what?
What?
It's your birthday Wednesday! Boop, boop. When you guys hear this episode, it's going to be Jen's birthday. She's going to be 63. She's 63 this year, so fingers crossed that AARP card comes in.
I've already got the AARP. I've got it for years. I'm going to be crying, rocking in the corner.
Hey.
No, not really. I'm going to be 51. Really. It's not that bad. It's not as bad as I think. Or as I thought, I should say.
Well, could be.
It could be worse.
It could be.
I could not be having any birthdays whatsoever.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So it's not so bad. Not so bad. Jennifer.
I don't take my birthdays as hard as you do. You take the birthdays hard.
I did, but I don't anymore now. I don't care.
Yeah.
I
think the worst birthday for me was 29 because it was like, God, I'm
40.
Yours was 40. Mine was 29. Because then I realized I wasn't in my 20s anymore, and I was in my, you know, the 30-somethings, the TV show, and
yeah,
it was the hardest. But it's only gotten better.
I gotcha.
Now I feel like I'm that Molly Shannon character going in, I'm 50!
Yeah, right.
You know, doing the kicks.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
Well, that's 50. How I feel like I'm, you know, I'm still here. So I always tell my coworker, it's like the Matrix. I'm like just dodging stuff. Like as people are falling, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Here comes that, you know, whatever.
I still feel like I'm 34 years old. I don't feel like I'm a day over 34.
I do when I wake up, but that's okay. No. Whatevs. No. Hey, hello, Jennifer. Hey, governor. Hey, governor.
Okay.
You got a little, I think you got a little announcement to make for us.
We do, as Camille is trying to tell you with her awful British accent. Awful.
Oh.
We are going to be at CrimeCon in London on June 12th and 13th in 2021. We are so excited. So excited. Can't stand it.
And if you come over across the pond, maybe I'll give you my real life accent in person. Better? Was that better or not?
Not no? even close. Not even close. Yeah, if you guys want to come meet us, if you want to take a certain trip to go to London, or if you are our friends in London or anywhere in the UK, you can go to crimecon.co.uk and register to go. And if you use our code OTCP, you can get 10% off your purchase or off your tickets. And I'm telling you guys, it is so much fun.
It is so fun. This will be the fourth one that we've done.
First and, one in the UK. Yeah.
First we one have, abroad.
We have done CrimeCon since it first started in 2016. It was in Indiana. And it was a blast. That's actually where Cam got the idea for us to start a podcast. And it wasn't until the next year that we actually decided to do it. It took us that long.
And now look at us, Jen. We're going to London, England.
Oh, we've met so...
Not London, Missouri. London, England.
We have met so many cool people at CrimeCon. First year, we met Josh Mankiewicz. I got a great big hug from Josh Mankiewicz. Dateline.
Lieutenant Joe Kinder.
Yes, the handsome
the actor.
One. The actor. Yeah.
Still cute.
Look at me stumbling. Oh, he's adorable. We met so many cool podcasters. We met the men from Crawlspace. We met the guys from Gen Y. Oh my God, are they the nicest men ever? They're going to be over in London too. Also, our friend Emily from Morbidology, our friends Elaine from Crime Lapse will be there. There's going to be so many cool people there. And that's just on Podcast Row. I don't even know all the cool people that they're going to have to do the classes and the speakers. It's going to be amazing. You guys need to go.
You guys should come. Seriously. It's fun. I guarantee you will have a blast.
So much fun. And you get to meet us and have a drink with us. A pint.
That part might not be as fun for you.
But it'll be fun for us. We'd love to meet you. So anyway, go to crimecon.co.uk and use your code OTCP and get 10% off tickets. We want to see you there.
And we'll tell you a little bit. We'll drop some more things as we go, just to kind of let you know what to expect if you've never been to a crime con. It is something, let me tell you.
It's fun. Bring a sweater because the rooms are always cold. Well, at least over here they are.
Over here they are, but I'm sure it's the same there. So do we have a promo this week, Jen?
We do. Our promo this week is from our friend Paige from Reverie Podcast.
Nice. So until everybody say happy birthday under your breath to Jen, because it's her birthday right now, right here, right as you're hearing this. And she is old as dirt, you know. Mm-hmm. But until then, remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love you. Go get your flu shot. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Jen. For more information about this episode, as well as all other sources, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by the hosts, Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. You can reach Nico at WeTalkOfDreams.com. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from Octoberpod VHS. You can find all of his great works on YouTube. Please make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter with the handle at Our True Crime Pod. You can also email us at OurTrueCrimePodcast@gmail.com. We would also at this time like to thank our patrons. We would be so lost without you. Thank you so much. And if you would like to help support the show, you can check us out on patreon.com/ourtruecrimepodcast. You can also show your support by leaving a 5-star review on Apple or simply just tell your friends about us. It's that easy. Love ya. So we'll blah, 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 starting now. Hold on. Let me get a drink.
I forgot my water out there, but I'm not going to move because I'm all bunched in here. In with the good.
I know.
it out with the bed.
There he met a 29-year-old man by the name of Mark Fleckenstein. I know. I always want to say Mark Fleckenstein from the Young Frankenstein. Or Frankenstein. It's Frankenstein. And then David went on to explain that, well, if Billy needs these accounts released, that he actually needs to go in person, in person, branch.
Better go in person and shine up on his ship.
I'm sure that the police knew at this time that Billy had most likely killed Brad. And
Billy had killed Brad?
No.
He did?
I know.
That's amazing.
Shocking. That's why I wanted to do this. Dun, dun, dun.
Plot twist.
There's too many names. Names and consonants. I can't do it.
Start with B.
Consonants.
Why can't there be a George?
I can't. Why can't everybody just have the same name? I'm going to be mad if it's so helpful.
So then Sarah stumbled upon Sarah, and then soon they called Sarah.
Right. Exactly. Thank you. All right. Excuse me. I just had the demon come out of my voice.
Get out of her!
The power of Christ compels you. All right.
My name is Paige, and I'm the host of Reverie True Crime. Reverie means to daydream, but even daydreams can turn into nightmares. Join me as I tell you about horrific reveries on the Reverie True Crime podcast, wherever you stream your favorite podcasts.